From the Land Grant University in Urbana, Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 15th day of April, 2026. It's tax day. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Tug Gleason. Today, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Greg Johnson from TGM. That's TotalGrainMarketing.com online. We'll hear from Ishan Banu. He's with Kepler and a logistics agricultural commodities specialist. We'll talk about the bulk movement of fertilizers out of the Persian Gulf, and then we'll turn our attention to the weather forecast. Drew Lerner will help us hopscotch across the planet and the northern growing regions of the world on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. In Chicago at the CME Group, corn futures finished the day 7 to 8 higher, soybeans up 9 to 10, and wheat up 1 to 2 for the afternoon. Greg Johnson from TGM, that's TotalGrainMarketing.com now, joins us. Hi, Greg. Thanks for being with us, and also thanks ahead of time for joining us for our Commodity Week discussion. We'll hold that tomorrow afternoon.
Looking forward to it.
Indeed. Well, we'll have a lot to discuss then, but we have a lot to discuss today as well, as farmers have gone to the field. I suspect, well, maybe not quite gone to the field because they're probably out from the rainfall in the area, but that it remains quiet on the phones at this point, or are they calling in to check on potential new crop sales still?
Yeah, between the sell-off in corn, we've been down 4 weeks in a row until this week. It looks like we're finally going to break that four-week losing streak, but prices are down, you know, at the midpoint or maybe slightly below the midpoint for where we've been since the first of the year. So that's not encouraging any farmers to get real aggressive with sales at this point. And like you said, I think a lot of the focus now is farmers want to get into the field, get some beans planted. We've seen a few beans planted in this area. The stories we're hearing, the reports are that the southern third of Illinois has really made some progress, anywhere from a third to a half of the beans planted already, and some corn's been planted as well. I don't think we're that far along here. I think we're still, you know, in the 10% range on beans, maybe getting a little bit more than that now in between showers, but you know, certainly made a little bit of progress on the soybeans. Sounds like we've got a rainy forecast for the next several days, but it still, you know, seems plenty early and as dry as the subsoil moisture was going in. I don't think that this, at least I hope it doesn't keep us out very long, but I think farmers right now are focused on trying to get the crop in the ground.
I have a secondary question about the dryness in the area. We were under heavy drought through the winter months, and while we have had rain, I just feel as if there's a sneaky suspicion underneath at least our part of the world that things, certainly in the subsoil, have not recovered completely at this point. Though it looks really nice up top still.
You're right. You're exactly right as far as the subsoil moisture is concerned. We went 13 months in a row, dating all the way back to November of 24, where the monthly rainfall totals here in Champaign were below the 10-year and 20-year averages. I think we finished calendar year 2025 with about 27 inches, and we normally get 41. So we went into this year with a very big deficit, double-digit inch deficit. And so while March was a very welcome relief with about 6.5 inches of rain for most of us, that really soaked in. And I don't think that we're in any jeopardy of being flooded out anytime soon. So I think at this point, rain is still a good thing. We'll take the rain and replenish the subsoil moisture, even if that delays the planting progress a little bit.
Beyond the Iran war, most of the attention now turned to the new crop season for corn and soybeans and planting conditions across the United States, you suppose?
I think so, yeah. December corn is trading right in that 476 range, 475 range. We've been as low as 445, as high as 497 or 498. So the midpoint is 470. So we're right at midpoint, maybe just a little bit above. But with all the uncertainty, with all the stories about fertilizer prices and availability, and, you know, we still don't know about the acres, I think there's enough uncertainty that farmers just aren't willing to lock in average prices. If we can get back up to the upper end of the range, I think farmers will be more willing to sell both old crop and new crop corn. But right in the middle here with the whole growing season ahead of us and with all the uncertainty politically and in the world, it just feels like farmers are content to wait a little bit longer before making any new crop sales.
Domestic soybean crush has been really good over the last 12 months. Do we expect that to continue and accelerate?
Yeah, it kind of boils down to the mandate, the RVO mandate, which has certainly helped. But, you know, I think that's kind of factored in. And I think as we talked about the last couple of weeks, we're basically at maximum capacity for crush at this point until some new plants come online. And that's not going to happen until the end of the year at the earliest, I don't believe. So basically, we need to see exports pick back up again, you know, to supplement the strong domestic crush numbers. And President Trump and President Xi are scheduled to meet in China or somewhere around May 14th or 15th, which is now only a month away. So I think as we get close to that date, all eyes will turn to that and see if exports can help out this crush number, because the crush number is very good, but we certainly need the exports to pick back up as well.
Anything else before I let you go?
The dollar is continuing to be weaker. That's always good for exports. That's the good news. Ethanol demand is very good. Very good. I think there's some hope that you know, government demand on ethanol will help us out, and maybe we'll see some ethanol exports. The problem is live cattle prices are at all-time highs, so that kind of reflects the fact that the numbers are at all-time lows. So ethanol numbers are good, export numbers are good on corn, but the biggest use of corn is livestock demand, and until we see that start to pick back up, kind of feels like we're comfortable with a 2.1, 2.0 billion bushel carryout.
On that note, as I was coming back from Orion Samuelson's funeral on Friday of last week, I filled up at the Love's truck stop just south of La Salle, Peru, on Interstate 39, and it was 15% for the regular 87 and 89, and 10% for the premium. And that surprised me that ethanol was flowing that way. So, good news, I suppose.
We'll take it. That's right.
Thank you much. We'll talk with you again next week.
Thanks, Todd.
You're welcome. That's Greg Johnson. He is with TGM, TotalGrainMarketing.com. You can hear him each and every Wednesday right here during the closing market report from Illinois Public Media, or listen to it as a podcast online anytime you'd like, in Apple and Spotify, on YouTube, and any other place that you listen to your favorite podcast, like the Closing Market Report. Just look for it by name. Our theme music is written, performed, produced, and courtesy of Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. The recent closure of the Strait of Hormuz is creating significant logistical bottlenecks for global agricultural commodities, specifically within the fertilizer sector. Now, roughly 18% of the world's fertilizer exports originate from the Persian Gulf, and ships remain laden in the Gulf with no clear exit timeline. This disruption is promoting export restrictions, too, from some major producers. Today, we'll break down the global supply chain impact and detail why this scarcity could affect harvest yields well into 2027. We're joined by Ishan Banu. He is the lead commodity agricultural analyst for the tracking firm Kepler. Ishan, thank you for being with us. Can you tell me a bit about Kepler, please?
Sure. Kepler will bring transparency to commodities markets. We do that by tracking all commodities on vessels that flow around the world. That's just the base layer. In addition to that, we do global supply and demand analysis on a lot of commodities across energy, liquids, and dry bulks. So that includes metals, minerals, agriculture. To different degrees, Kepler is used by physical players, merchants, producers, consumers, as well as financial players.
Let's talk about some of the bulk commodities that move through the Strait of Hormuz out of the Persian Gulf. In particular, I'm interested in the fertilizers themselves. Give me a broad overview of historically what that has been like, and then we can talk about the impact of the Iran war and the closure of the strait.
Sure, absolutely. So the region, the Persian Gulf or the Middle East Gulf, accounted for about 18% of global fertilizer exports last year, and about 17% the year before. All of these exports have to go through the Strait of Hormuz. A big chunk of this fertilizer is nitrogen fertilizer, so mainly urea. The second most important commodity out of the region is sulfur, which is used to make sulfuric acid, but also for phosphate fertilizers.
And then once the strait closed or the war began, how were the flows disrupted?
So very interestingly, if you just look at fertilizer loadings in the Gulf, they have been going almost as normal. What happened was at the moment the strait closed, there were already quite a few vessels in the Gulf headed to load fertilizer, ballasting their way there, or delivering something else within the Gulf than supposed to load fertilizers. What we've seen over the last month is that all of these vessels have continued to load and now they're all laden. So if you look at the number of fertilizer-laden vessels in the Middle East Gulf, it's about 43 vessels, which has never been the case. The last we had seen something like that was 15 vessels. So vessels that were supposed to load fertilizers have loaded fertilizers. They're waiting in the Gulf, but none of them have exited, and we have not seen any recent attempts to exit the strait.
Because these were loading within the last month, and are now waiting, so they're somewhere between, I suppose, 15 and, I don't know, a few days behind schedule. Has that disrupted very much fertilizer trade, do you think, across the planet?
It has. And of course, 15, 20 days behind schedule is not much to cause scarcity at destination. We will see a lot of that in the coming weeks. But we can see people, companies, and countries planning for the scarcity. For example, I talked about how sulfur is used to make phosphates. The largest importer of sulfur from the region is Morocco, which is also one of the largest phosphate exporters in the world. Morocco has expressed issues with their ability to continue to produce phosphate fertilizers. China also imports a lot of sulfur from the region, and China has introduced export restrictions on several different types of fertilizers, which we have detailed in our pieces. So has Russia. Russia has also not directly because of inability to import from the region, but because of higher prices and to protect their own domestic market. Russia has also announced that it will restrict exports of certain fertilizer types. So we're seeing first order and second order effects in the fertilizer market across the world.
So we currently have delay. We may have scarcity at some point. There are nations that are planning for that, which should move the scarcity back, I suppose, to some extent. Do you have a timeline that you're watching for when scarcity and or prices might spike?
As soon as the strait was blocked, nitrogen-related fertilizer prices spiked immediately, and they have continued to go up over the last month. Phosphates have followed and will continue to follow because it's not just nitrogen, it's not just urea, it's all fertilizers. And this is typically what happens in scarce markets, that the people who have the commodity and are able to export also limit their exports. It's very similar to the world thinking the US might also ban crude exports or energy exports. So it's similar to that, but that's happening in the fertilizer market. Immediately, the countries close to the Gulf, prime example here is India, has stopped getting its fertilizers that it was getting from the Gulf, and a lot of the cargo would have reached India by now. Some of what is still bottled in the Gulf, and their summer crops are under threat because of that.
The agricultural economics team here at the University of Illinois has been cautioning, even warning producers that by the time we get to the fall of this year, September, October, when many in the United States would be in need of nitrogen, and much of the anhydrous ammonia is already produced here, urea, a different case, the prices will be high despite the production in the United States. Still a global marketplace, and they expect it will remain high, something like $860 a ton, I suppose. How do you see this playing out over the next several months?
I agree with that. Even though there's not immediate scarcity within the US, high prices are, we are a globalized world. High prices will persist as long as the conflict continues.
What things have I not asked that maybe I should have about this marketplace?
So, on high prices, for example, there were several surveys which showed that most US farmers were covered, or at least covered but not priced. It's a similar story across the world. So while high prices have an effect on current crops, they will have a much stronger effect on later crops. And when we see longer term charts on when fertilizer prices spiked 5 years ago, the effect of that was on yields the year after. The effect of this will be felt not just in 2026, but also in 2027. It could affect yields of crops as far as your harvest in May 2025, 27.
Ishan, thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Ishan Banu is with Kepler. It is a logistics consultancy company. Let's turn our attention now to the global growing regions. Drew Lerner is here. He is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Drew, thanks much for being with us. I'd like to take a tour of the Northern Hemisphere and the growing regions and get an update on what spring and winter conditions have been like and your expectations. Let's start in the United States. We have had some issues with, of course, the hard red winter wheat growing regions of Kansas, Oklahoma, parts of Colorado, and Texas. How are things there today?
Well, the weather in the high plains continues to be quite dry. That's been the biggest issue. And of course, we've been seeing a lot of heat coming and going across that region periodically. And if it wasn't just that, we've also had some wild temperature swings over the past few months as well, and we're about ready to do it again. Temperatures in the last couple of days have been in the 80s and lower 90s throughout hard red winter wheat country. Will continue to be very warm to hot for another day or two, and then it's going to get cold. And it looks like the temperatures this weekend will likely fall below freezing in Nebraska, western Kansas, and eastern Colorado. Temperatures in the 20s. There might even be some upper teens in parts of eastern Colorado. Now, we think there is a better potential for us to see some rain in some of that region when we get out about a week and a half from now. Now, this is the first day that we've seen this. I don't have a lot of confidence, but I will say that the setup is a little bit better than anything we've seen recently. So there may be some rain that comes around in Kansas, Nebraska, and Colorado in about a week and a half, but that's a long ways out in time, a lot of potential for change. And of course, it's also a lot later in the growing season by then, so I'm not quite sure how much benefit we're going to be able to give to that crop when it does finally rain.
And then in the Corn Belt, a quick look there.
Most of the corn and soybean producing areas right now, of course, are being faced with a lot of precipitation. Now, the exception to that is the Ohio River Valley and points southward through the Tennessee Basin and even parts of the Delta. Those areas are seeing some fairly good weather. Some field work should be advancing in those areas. But the rest of the Midwest, it's not been a very pretty picture. A lot of frequent precipitation events, field work's been real sluggish. and we've got more rain coming. We're stuck in a rut right now. Frequent storms from Texas to the Great Lakes region that'll continue for at least another week. And then we might see a little bit of a shift southward in the precipitation, which I think there will be a lot of folks in the Great Lakes region that will be glad about that. Wisconsin and Michigan just getting pelted with way too much moisture. Flooding is becoming more and more common. And like I said, we've got another week of that before they get a break. So I think as we look further down the road, we'll bring a little bit of a short-term break in the wet biased pattern, but I'm afraid it may come back again as we get into the last days of April and into early May.
And in Europe, from France to the Black Sea?
Yeah, we've dried down France here recently, as well as portions of northwestern Africa, Morocco and northwestern Algeria, Spain, Portugal. All of these areas had an abundance of moisture earlier this winter. They firmed up here recently. It's not too dry, though. It's really a pretty good scenario. They will need rain another week to 10 days from now, at least in the dryland areas. Now, for the Black Sea region, they have had mostly good weather. It's been a little chilly still. They've been trying to warm it up and get into the fields. A little bit of field work has begun. There was some colder air that reached into parts of Russia this past weekend and earlier in the work week, and there was been some talk in the market that it was threatening, but I don't believe that was the case. The crop has not had a chance to develop enough to be an issue there. So for the most part, the outlook for the spring planting season, I think, is very good for most of Europe and the western portions of the former Soviet Union.
What are you watching in India today?
Yeah, in India, it's all about El Nino. A lot of market chatter about what happens to the monsoon this year. For right now, they're harvesting winter crops. It is seasonably dry and warm. It's a good environment for that. I think that El Nino, with it developing so quickly, there's going to be a larger lag in the atmosphere between the time when they declare El Nino to be present and when it will influence India. So I'm thinking that the first part of the monsoon season will probably go fairly well, and then they'll probably dry down in the second half. So August and September will probably be fairly dry, but the first part of their season should go fairly well.
And finally, in China.
China, the rapeseed areas are getting too wet. They've had a lot of rain recently. Some of the early crop is maturing and supposed to be harvested at this time of the year. And we're running into too much moisture, so a lot of field work is kind of sitting on hold. It looks like it's going to be fairly rainy there for a good little while. So there may be some quality issue that surfaces out of that area for the rapeseed. Now, for wheat further north, the situation looks very good right now. The crop should be starting to develop and doing fairly well, with periodic precipitation expected to come and go.
Thanks for the tour. We'll talk with you again next week.
You bet. Have a good week.
You too. That's Drew Lerner. He is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joined us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report that came to you from Illinois Public Media. I'm Todd Gleason.